bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast, our special show for our special fans and friends and everybody else. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hey, everybody, that's me. Hi.
So I had a moment, like, I don't know, like a day ago or whatever. I'm on Twitter, and there's a guy I follow. I followed this guy's career since he was in high school, since he was this, you know, this Cub reporter covering the news for the local high school.
That is a weird thing to admit to.
Followed him closely from my van. Watched him. Studied him.
I invited him down to my warehouse. I said he would have a special part of my operation.
I invited him to go downtown to an alternative movie theater and hang out.
True fact.
Help chaperone campouts and other things, whatever I can do.
Just an older man taking his young ward to a John Waters movie in the gayest per capita neighborhood in America. What's so strange about that? Oh.
How did any of our parents ever let us become friends?
Oh, yeah. Well, you put it that way, Justin. And I'm watching Justin cover. He's in the press pit over at, like, the Trump rally, and he's like, he's been a real journalist, but he's like on his own, independent, doing real journalism sort of stuff out there on the trail and making it happen for himself. And I was just very proud and very impressed and all that. And I wanted to hear something about some more about just the experience of that, you know, and how did that all come together?
Well, you know, I was joking with Brian a couple months ago when I was in Austin for something that I was noticing on the Patreon last year, on the Politics Patreon last year, that I would get like an extra $30 to $40 on my like weekly total every time a candidate dropped out. Like that there would be this like spike that like as there was some kind of news and I'm like, man, if this is a tremor for an earthquake, then this is going to be a very interesting year. And so that kind of shaped the way that I was thinking about how I would cover it, because I can certainly cover. And look, there are massive political podcasts that just do this from the comfort of their own home, right? Maybe they go to Iowa. Maybe if they're close to another state geographically, then they'll go and do a live show or something like that there. But I kind of noticed that there was a niche where nobody really was like funding themselves as a journalist that wasn't a like advocacy thing. I mean, in general, that's a lesser filled niche. But in my case, you know, I know what this is like. I've covered campaigns before. I know how you do it. I know what you should do. And I'm not really afraid of doing it. It was really just a money thing. And so I put up a goal of 1776, you know, assuming that that would roughly cover from where I was, which is about 1500 per week. You know, we were close to it, but I assumed that we would not. So the goal was, I was definitely going to go to Iowa. I was definitely going to go to Nevada, but if we hit 1776, then I would go to New Hampshire and I would go to South Carolina. And we were in the 1600s when I was like, you want to know what? We're probably going to hit this and it's probably going to be too late for New Hampshire. So let me just book the stuff as we got closer. And man, did we hit a momentum that has really not stopped. I think the listeners have really rewarded just going out and doing stuff. They've liked the content that I've created from the road, which is really important, because very often when a podcast leaves its natural habitat, the quality declines. But I put in some time and effort to just make sure that even around my neighborhood, you know, two podcasts a week, I would just leave this studio that I have all set up just so I can record and edit and post, not in my apartment, just so I got the reps and used to it. And I think that the final product, now that I'm out in the field, is reflective of that, and the audience seems to really appreciate it. So that has kind of led me, now that I'm on the trail, basically, to just kind of trying to continue to keep things fresh and worthwhile for people. And so far it's been working.
Well, the important thing to remember is it's only going to get less contentious and interesting from here. So make sure that you're like banking as much as you can, right? It's not like that growth will just keep on going.
Well, I mean, I do think that there is an element of like, hey, look, this is harvest time until the end of November, right? Because I don't know where the national interest in politics is going to be after November. We are at an abnormal high now, and maybe that is the new normal, and we are always this dialed in on it. In that case, that's great. But I also know that, look, election years make stars. Election years build habits. Election years are when new voices are really kind of minted. And I just know that if there's a time to focus on it, it's now. Now is when I need to be doing my best work. And it is insanely gratifying to see folks kind of put their money where their mouth is to support it.
Well, and we've talked about this before. When it comes to hiring folks, there's different things that you pay for. There's unproven talent, there's proven talent, but the sweet spot, of course, is emerging talent, people who are not yet fully proven and able to stand behind their, you know, very, very expensive rates. At this point, like, you're rounding that corner, Justin, because not just for your political insights, but also for your experience as a podcaster, like you are leaving behind emerging talent as your category and going into proven talent, certainly in the world of podcasting. But what I'm really excited to see you rounding the next corner, doing, you know, more TV appearances and that kind of stuff. Do you feel that tug, or is right now you can't afford to even think about that? It's just got to be get through this year.
I will pundit talk wherever anybody wants me to pundit talk. You know, that is something where, you know, to be honest, I guess if I really wanted to get into that area, I would probably try to solicit a agent or booker person that like facilitates a lot of those kinds of deals. But for right now, the only thing that, like, I have a crank, and the harder that I crank on it, the more money comes out. Right. So, that is my only goal right now, is just to reward. I want everybody who is putting in money now to understand that for the next several months, this is my priority. I am putting boots on the ground, and I'm making sure that they get the absolute best, can't hear it anywhere else content, because if somebody else can give me somebody else, or another person that's doing this, then I would love to hear it. But I think I'm the only independent person on the trail. Like, I think everybody else has a corporate card that they, charge back to people. But this is, I think what I'm doing is unique, based on at least talking to other people in the press pools.
I know that's certainly what I found when I've talked to other people who have, you know, followed you or whatever, is that I think the confusion people have, we're like, I don't know what he stands for. I don't know what he's doing. And it's like, this is what an independent person covering stuff looks like. This is what it looks like when somebody who's more concerned with covering the story than pushing his own particular agenda or point of view handles it. And I think for some people, it's just orienting.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting as we get closer, because it's not like I'm without opinions. It's just opinions that I mostly have are based on whether or not I think a campaign is running effectively or not. Mm-hmm. You know, like the will of the populace is not something that I look to sway, but I am here to tell you that, like, you know, I want to be in the crow's nest
And you can think I'm good at looking out into the ocean or not, but if I'm calling out land ho or iceberg, then I want to earn that.
I think it's admirable. And I think part of the problem too is because we've often heard the term independent journalism, and it just means like I'm farther to the right or farther to the left of everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an independent journalist. Like, sure you are.
Yeah.
You know, where.
Yeah. And I think that there is obviously a lot of people have their own opinions on the media and where it comes from and why it's slants one way or another. And I think that there's a good discussion there. But in general, I don't think a lot of people, from my perspective, get into it because they actually want to cover things. You know, it's advocacy, which I think has its it certainly has its place on the grand kaleidoscope of content that the internet is here to offer. But it's also not something that I'm particularly comfortable with. And I think I do this better. I think that I actually like that. That is the thing that I really enjoy, is that the concept of a journalist who kind of gets out of the way of the story, or at least focuses on more of the X's and O's, is something that I think is a wider a possible audience, you know, where if I can build up a trust in a brand in that what I am seeing and what my instincts are is something worthwhile to people, then that's something that talks to everybody. And people can call me wrong, and I play into that, on Twitter, where, you know, I'll back a hunch, and if it fails, then everybody can laugh as I, you know, change my Twitter icon to a goose or whatever. But I think that that's way more where I want to be than somebody who's like, oh, I'm independent because the man won't tolerate my opinions that are either extreme left or extreme right.
I have a plan. I think I'd like to do, you know, after this election, is I have an international elections. So I'd love for you to cover like Iran. I think it'd be great to.
Sure. Yeah. No, that would be great.
I mean, I would love to know what the Patreon goal is to send, for like local elections in Wuhan. How much would it take for Justin to get boots on the ground walking around over there?
Yeah, that'd be a high one. I feel like, I might have to start taking Bloomberg ads if I wanted to break in that kind of.
Iran, they just had their election and they had the lowest turnout they have ever had, which.
Is that an indication that in general people are hopeless or happy?
Hopeless, very hopeless, very upset, because they can only vote for the Ayatollah says these are the candidates you get us. This is your slate. Choose one of these fine people I've picked, and they're like, we're done. You know.
Yeah.
And I want you to get to the heart of that story, Justin. You've already got the beard for it.
I'm going to stick to just kind of making fun of Biden's speeches. I feel like.
So tell us about, like, right. What's the, like, how did you get into, like, I see you in the press pool. How did that happen?
I mean, shockingly easy. When you're on the trail, there's a press table and you walk up there and you say, I'm press. And they go, cool. Did you pre-register? And I said, no. They go, who are you with? I'm like, my podcast. And luckily I have nice cards. That helps. But in general, I don't think they really care. They just, you know, hand.
Are you suggesting that maybe it's harder to get into TwitchCon than it is to get into one of these political events as press?
100%. I mean, again, they are free events. So push them to shove, even if I didn't go into the press pen, I could just walk in as a citizen. The only thing that the press pen gives me the advantage for is I don't have to wait in a line. You know, if there's a line to get into something, then I can just walk in. But with the Trump one was actually a lot more involved. You have to submit through the website and then they vet you there and then you get approved or not approved. And so I was on the list to go into the thing. And so they search everything and you walk in and then you are in the you have free reign. It is just kind of like a fast pass line to the event itself. But you have the enemy, the people pen there in the center of it, which I think it's kind of a work. by everybody involved, like the people, the Trump supporters there, like the first time that Trump did his, you know, like, oh, look at the fake news back there and everybody boos. I was on the side, so I'm next to everybody that's there and everybody's booing. And I just go, hey, that's me. And everybody laughed. And they were like, ah, ha, ha. So it's like, I don't think that it was a.
Well, that was like, you'd hear, like, you'd see, like, with Jim Acosta, where you would see, like, oh, boo. And then you'd see all the selfies people took with him.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's
everybody's pro wrestling.
Yeah, everybody's got their opinions on the media, and that's certainly not anything that, you know, as Fire Chris Matthews is trending, that is not unique to one side of the political spectrum. People get mad at the opinions that are spouted on the television, but I don't necessarily think that it's you know, the deep down hatred. There were very kind people, including my mother, who were like, oh, please be careful. Like, don't, you know, don't get hurt at the Trump rally. And it's fine. You know, it's a political rally. People were very excited to be there, but I never at all felt in mortal jeopardy. In fact, the only time I was only one person that was in any way rude. And it was just, you know, as people were walking in, I was asking them, to see if I could ask them a few questions, and one person just kind of brushed by me without acknowledging that. But it's like, it's no more rude than I've seen in a billion other different massive events where you're just looking for somebody's time for the price of nothing.
Yeah, the press pass is interesting, because I remember once that we were like, there was like a magic convention in South Florida, and I watched some guy walk up to the table with a press pass to try to get into the dealer's room. Yeah. And it's like, this guy looked like he worked in, like, you know, delivery. Yeah. Not there. And then he borrowed, you know, it was just that kind of, it was like a Miami Herald press pass. Oh, I want to get in. Yeah, da, da, da. And I'm like, how often, whose is this? And how often does this guy use this to try to just barge his way into stuff?
I mean, it's pretty remarkable. Like, each state party, so the Democrats that are running the elections now, you can register through them, and they give you kind of like a more official looking, like, caucus primary or caucus or primary kind of badge. But otherwise, it really, especially with these events, like, you don't really need anything. In fact, one of my favorite moments of the trail so far was I was in New Hampshire with our friend Andrew Heaton, and Heaton, I don't think had been going through the press lines at the events. He was just showing up as kind of like an average citizen. But he met me at the Pete Buttigieg rally in New Hampshire. And we're there in this long press line because the event had been delayed. And we get up to the front, and I have done this enough times that I just know that they don't care who we're with. Like, there's plenty of room in the press bin. Just they need to write down who you are. They need to get your name, and they need to move you through. But Heaton, for whatever reason, was under the impression that he had to, like, that this was Shark Tank, and he had to kind of, like, sell him and his podcast, like, to the person. So he's like, oh, well, you know, I'm Andrew Heaton, and I do a podcast called The Political Orphanage. And, you know, it's more of a tribe for people who are alienated from many sides. And I'm very excited to see Mr. Buttigieg, because I think that there's a real, you know, corridor for my listenership. And the guy is just like, all right, how do you spell your last name? Like, but the funniest part was behind us is the crew for ABC. And I had been talking to the cameramen. They were very cool. The talent, on the other hand, whose name I don't know, otherwise I would embarrass publicly, boy, was he huffy. And he was huffy in the line because the line wasn't moving. And you can imagine the eye roll, the arc on the eye roll, as Andrew Heaton is in front of him in line discussing his podcast. He now can't get into this event. It was just, I almost, when I got through, I just wanted to go to Heaton and just like stretch more. His head explodes.
He's about to boil over. Keep going.
This is amazing. I think anybody out there that's thought about going through pretender or, you know, syndrome or whatever, you know, imposter syndrome, it's like, yeah, we all do. Still, just do it.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I have is just I have the listeners, and the listeners have really responded both monetarily and also just through emails and stuff like that. And so I know that I got a few thousand people that I am talking to every time I put something out, and they are getting something that they are proud of and they can share. And as long as I'm proud of the product, then that's really all I care about. I care about giving them something of quality, which clarifies a lot of like, should I go to this thing? Do I deserve to go to this thing? Like, how should I, you know, how should I comport myself there? It's like, no, I'm here for them. I go and I get this stuff for them, and they are the clarifying message.
Gentlemen, do we have picks?
Yeah, I got a couple of things. Quick announcement. Last week you heard us talking about the possibility of doing a big old event for our Founders Day 1 year anniversary celebration here at the 7 Acre Schwood, doing a live night attack. I don't think I can officially announce it yet, but it looks an awful lot like we're going to be able to fly out our friends from Ice Cream Social. And it looks like we got...
Confirm it.
Oh, you can confirm it. Great. Excellent. And then we locked in for a proper full-length concert, our friends over at Jomo and the Possum Posse. I am chatting with Matt Donnelly about what it'll look like for the two of us to do a stage magic show, which has been a hot minute for me to perform. And I don't think he and I have ever performed and shared the stage together. So that should be a lot of fun. And we're talking about just making it a full-day event. It'll be pretty much from noon till midnight on Saturday, April 4th. And then we'll do like a follow-up thing the following morning on April 5th, Sunday. But keep an eye out for that. Listen to the Night Attack podcast or just hit me up on Twitter as details emerge. But it's going to have to be super, super exclusive because we can't keep too many people in. But my pick is a weird one. I spent 3 hours with my kids watching a kind of a cinematic summary of another game. I started the game off and... Penny was really, really into the story right up until it got violent, and then all of a sudden she didn't want to watch it anymore. But the opening was so engaging that she dived in, and we ended up watching 3 hours of sort of a cinematic cut of Bioshock Infinite, which I just loved. I just loved it. And a lot of people do this. There's going to be different flavors of cuts, and different people find different parts interesting. But by the end of it, it was full on crying. It was just a blast. And to Penny, this was old hat because she doesn't like the pressure that actually playing a game involves. But she does love the stories, so she will watch a lot of other people play games. Of course, that's the whole foundation of Twitch, is that if you want the sitting on the couch next to your friend playing a video game experience, that's what's baked in. But that plus the editing side of things is just so it's great. It's a great game.
So I have a question for you, because I think I recommended a similar movie cut of an RPG a few months back. How did you go about deciding which one to pick? Because when I just Googled it, there was this 3.5 hour one, and then there was a longer 6 hour one.
I went by sort of a blend of popularity, which versus how much time I had. And to be honest, the 3 hour cut, I thought I was going to be doing a lot of skip, 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 skip. But oh, that no. game in particular is so good about having plot dialogue in the middle of a battle that we ended up watching an awful lot of battles, and it's really great.
And almost any, especially the big video games that you're like, oh, I've heard of that, I just will never play it, like a lot of times there's movie cuts or like story cuts on YouTube of those games.
That's what I did for, I think I jumped into the Uncharted series at sure. Uncharted 3, and it was, they're like, don't go back and play Uncharted 1. It's, you know, it's old. And then, but just watching the cinematic cut was great.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, those are great.
So that's my pick.
I got a pick. Oh man, I just forgot it.
I got a pick.
You go.
Memory pills.
We were talking about I was talking about Love is Blind on Netflix as my Weird Things pick, and I have another reality Netflix show to pick for After Things. It is the original Next in Fashion. Have you guys seen about this?
No.
Have you heard about this? So this is Netflix doing a runway fashion show a la Project Runway. But they have Tan France from the new Queer Eye and designer Alexa Chung who host. I think they're pretty good hosts. It feels different from Project Runway in that they definitely have designers on who have talent. Like they, like Project Runway tries to get talented, but very unknown designers, where the ones that they got in Next in Fashion are a little more well-known and definitely have like a lot of celebrity filled resumes for what they're doing. And so their goal, they do design challenges, and the goal is like 200, or the reward is $250,000 in cash, or I guess just winnings. And it's pretty neat. I think it's always interesting to watch Netflix make reality shows, especially reality competition shows, because it's very clear that they just go and do it on a huge, you know, their huge studio lot. And so it's this big space and has all the dramatic stage lighting and everything. Every week when they do the runway, they're like different sort of layouts, and they have the video floors and the big video walls. It's interesting to see. And if you like reality competition shows, I think it's worth a look, because there are really talented people in there, and just the way that they edit it is a little different than like a cable reality TV show. It's a lot less of like infighting and drama, and a little more on like the emotional stories of the people and everyone's connection to the different genres that they are making fashions for. So if you ever like Project Runway itself already was like lower drama than some of the other reality competition shows. So this one is even more like, that's like very talent focused. So Next in Fashion.
Very cool.
Cool.
So I'm at the Monte Cristo Cigar Lounge in Caesars two nights ago. And I am talking to this dude at the bar. And he mentions that he's going to be, or I overhear him say that he's going to be in South Carolina. And I realize then that he is somebody who's covering the caucus. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to be in South Carolina too. I start talking to him. And as it turns out, it's the author of one of my favorite books about the 2016 election, Shattered. It is all about the Hillary Clinton campaign. But for my money, it is certainly more incisive and in-depth than anything that has come out from the Hillary Clinton sources themselves or other folks that been involved in it. But I thought it was good, and it was great meeting the author. So go ahead and check out if you want to hear about the inside story of the Hillary Clinton campaign, then read Shattered.
Yeah, you were singing the praises of this when it first came out. You were saying it was a real hot read.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I got to actually ask him about one of my favorite parts about that book is that Bill Clinton is this kind of character who just sort of like shows up periodically as this Greek chorus of like, hey, you know, that Brexit thing, man, that's maybe people should pay attention to that Brexit thing, you know, and everybody's like laughing about what a joke candidate Trump is. Bill Clinton was just sort of consistently in the background like, I mean, like, you might be right, but the problem with him is that he'd kind of been sidelined for a few reasons, including the Me Too stuff kind of like bubbling up that they didn't want to put him out there because then it would just be a relitigation of all the stuff that he has done in the past. But he still does have a very strong political instinct and was very, he never really like stepped up and yelled and screamed or wanted people fired, but he was always just sort of in the background saying, I don't know if we're talking to those blue collar voters. You know, maybe it would be the kind of people that would have voted Brexit.
There's a just a side thing. And that's one of the things that made me think about. And when we talked about the other podcast, the coronavirus, the COVID-19 map and stuff is that and this is the thing that comes up a lot in the book Alchemy is just this. Our over-reliance, well, there's a chart in front of me. There's a chart, this data. You know, the smart people have this data. We have this thing, and we need to sort of, that map is not the territory, you know, kind of thing. I'm reading a book that is maybe a map of the future, if you will. It's by Peter Diamandis and Steve Kotler, who wrote the other books like Bold and Abundance. This is a new book from them called The Future is Faster Than You Think.
And it's, you know, basically a continuation of like, hey, future's really cool. Here's all these sort of things to think about, the way things could interact and whatnot. And I wouldn't say that it's as, you know, groundbreaking as, let's say, like, you know, Abundance was or whatever, but it certainly is. These things change so fast. Technology moves so quickly. To have these guys putting out books every other year or so, I think is actually a great idea, because the world is very different than it was 2 years ago from a technological point of view. And, you know, when you're in it and you sort of appreciate the fact of how fast things move. So I'm enjoying it because they're talking about, like, you know, how does, you know, entertainment and AI converge? What's going on here? And they talk about, like, hey, some of the companies, they in the audiobook version of it, they have the chapter and then, like, they'll have a follow-up where the two of them will talk about, like, yeah, since we wrote this 6 months ago or whatever, this is what's, you know, since it went to press or whatever, this is what's changed here. You know, here's are some of the players, et cetera. So I've been enjoying it very much. So
awesome.
I just spent credit grabbing it. How's his narration this go around? I know you had beef with Diamandis' narration in Bold.
It wasn't Diamandis' narration that was in Bold that was the one that got to me as much.
Oh, okay. All right. Maybe I'm mixing it up. There was somebody that there was like a vocal.
The other author.
Oh, got it.
No, they're both. And actually they're better. I mean, it's better. I think it's Kotler is actually, you know, it's their voice, but I feel like that first book or whatever doing that. And this one, I think it's, for me, it's both of them kind of doing the narration on this one. And I think that I'm glad they're doing their voices. And I've had that before too. I've had sometimes pick up an audiobook. I'm like, man, like, I can't get over this guy's voice. And I'll pick up some other audiobook. Man, I love this. I'm like, wait, that was the guy from the other book. You know? I can think of a big author, like, it wrote a big book everybody loved. I'm like, I can't get into this guy. And I read another book that was just, I'm like, this is great. I'm like, wait, same guy. And most people aren't as picky as me. I think it's neat to see these guys, and particularly like afterwards when they're doing their conversation about what's changed and what stuff. So like I said, it's not going to be as a seismic shift as the other ones were. And like, oh my God, like Abundance is a great book to realize, like, listen, you got to think about a future where the cost of things goes to the floor, which in some ways sounds great, but in other ways is terrifying and stuff, because you have to think of where the markets are going to be and what the new technology is going to be. But to have these guys continue to think about it and talk about it, and I think is wonderful. So it's great. So,
cool.
Pick. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.